When I sat down to do research for this episode, it was initially going to be a defense of leather armor. But after even the barest amount of research, it turns out that people have already been doing that exact thing for years. So I realized I needed to change gears. But as I was looking at other people's research, I came to a realization. No one was really giving a good definition of the armors that they were referencing. So I decided, hey, let's talk about types of armor and help you with your world building. So let's talk about it on Waytat. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Waytat. I'm your host, William, and I will be your guide today as we talk far too deeply about armor and how it's handled in fictional settings. But before we get to that, I want to thank you so much for being here. It means the world to me that you're watching or listening. I mean, really, thank you so much. But before we get into the show, make sure to like, comment, and subscribe. Also, make sure to do the normal shoutouts, so check out Win Kashika on Twitch, and make sure to check out Mystic Luna on their shop online, or head to their stall in the Silverton Crafters Market, basically every weekend through to October, if you want to buy in person. But with that, let's get on to the show. So, as always, before we get into the topic, we're going to set up the parameters. For this episode, we're looking at armor generally considered to be medieval. So that means nothing after industrialization, or after armor began to be abandoned in favor of colorful jackets and lining up in rank and file to shoot at each other. For each one, we're going to talk about their pros and cons, and talk about how it's handled in fiction. And some of them we're going to touch, mostly the early ones, we're going to touch on how you can do them in your role-playing games. I kind of stopped going into as much detail towards the end of it because it's very hard to do that without just prescribing a war game, like a war game or role-playing game setting to you. For the most part, we are going to be using role-playing games for that, since it's the one that you can most easily get super detailed and granular on. You know, since if you're playing a war game where the weight, fatigue, and liquid absorbency of your armor matters, you probably should be playing it. Unless it's that wildly complex war game about World War II, where Italian forces need more water to boil their noodles, because then that's just funny. And I also want to get out ahead of things and just say that this is not a power scaling list. Armor has different pros and cons to their usage, and it's not just about which is the toughest and hardest to crack. Different armors are useful in different scenarios and for different people for different reasons. So, because of that, things like price, maintenance, comfort, style, and weight are going to be incredibly important. Because if you've ever worked in any kind of like physical labor field, you can attest that the amount of PPE people will wear is directly proportional to how required it is compared to how comfortable it is, even if it's just for safety. Like respirators in my job. They're hot, uncomfortable, and hard to breathe in. So a lot of us don't use them, even if the environment was in a state where it was viable without passing out. So in history and in fiction, you should be aware that people will forego heavier or more uncomfortable armor if it means they can die comfortable instead of hot, smelly, chafing, blistered, and pinched. Anyways, let's stop talking about parameters and start talking about some armor. Beginning with gambeson, which is just the European word for it. A more general term would be something like padded or quilted armor. This type of armor is created from layers of thick, sewn together or quilted textile materials to create a padded layer protection. Now, keep in mind that this is not modern fashion textiles. These aren't materials made to be worn for like a year, then thrown away because it's full of holes and faded. This is old school textiles. Textiles built to last a lifetime. So think less t-shirts stacked on top of each other and more overpriced clothing marketed as workwear that soft-handed hipsters wear. Now, since Gambeson is really maligned, let's start off with the positives. Firstly, it is very protective. Gambeson will protect you from basically any kind of glancing or chance strike, and can even protect you from dedicated hacks and slashes, as well as some stabs and bludgeons. Now, they're also pretty comfortable, I should know, as someone who owns a Gambeson, since they're pretty lightweight and they feel like a thick jacket. They can also be pretty damn good at preventing rubbing and chafing from stuff worn beneath them, so they can help you to manage your temperature a bit too. They can also be pretty damn good at preventing rubbing and chafing from stuff worn over top of it, or if it's between stuff like your armpits. Also, Gambeson tends to have an air pocket beneath them, so they can help you to manage your temperature a bit too. On top of all that, Gambeson is very quiet, making it beneficial for things like sneaking around and stealth. Gambeson is also incredibly affordable, especially compared to other kinds of armor, and is very versatile, since it's a great backing for essentially all other armors and can be worn pretty easily under most armor. And it's stylish and can be different lengths, styles, and designs for both your specific needs and your particular taste. Which might sound insignificant, but remember, you need to break the Western late-stage capitalist mindset that you're not allowed to have things that make you happy without a practical purpose, because humans have always been emotional creatures that want to have nice things because it gives you the happy brain chemicals, and feeling guilty about wanting to have something nice is as stupid as feeling guilty about being thirsty. Accessorize away the patriarchy. But, okay. Gambeson sounds busted as hell. Why isn't everyone wearing this? Well, and technically everyone is, because most armors assume you're wearing this behind it, but I'm going to choose to interpret that charitably. See, sure, padded armor is good, but there's a major problem with the protectiveness. Heavy melee weapons, high-draw ranged weapons or gunpowder, and fully dedicated blows will tear through Gambeson like a scalper tearing through a Pokemon release event. And thrusts are a major weakness of Gambeson as well, presenting less surface area for the Gambeson to catch before it pierces through. Now, Gambeson, being fabric, can also be caught on fire and can hold a flame. Now, while in real life, fire wasn't a particularly common weapon, this becomes a bigger issue in a fantasy setting, because suddenly, not only is your armor getting destroyed, but it's actively hurting you when the wizard casts Fortunate Sun, and now you're covered in fantasy napalm. Although still better than nothing. Now, also, if the Gambeson is poorly designed or over-padded, it can pretty heavily restrict your movements and can get very, very hot, which is bad for fatigue and also in hot climates. And while Gambeson is easy to repair if it does get damaged, it'll get damaged from normal wear and tear a lot quicker than any other kind of armor, meaning it's going to need more maintenance, and if it just so happens to catch a blow, it'll need to be re-sewn after the fight. Which, if you've ever sewn anything in your life, you can imagine how hard it would be to re-sew multiple thick layers of fabric, especially if it's your primary armor, re-sewing up to 30 layers of fabric. And on top of that, it'll absorb liquid easily, meaning water, grime, blood, shit, mud, and whatever else absorbs into it over the course of a fight, which then needs to be cleaned because it's both heavy and gross. And since that's essentially doing laundry on 30 layers of fabric, it's time-consuming. With all that said, how is it used in fiction? Well, it's not really talked about all that much. Most settings will bring up padded armor as a light armor option, if that. But it's mostly ignored unless we're talking about in RPGs. In D&D, though, padded armor gets shafted, And not in the fun way. It's the lowest level armor in the game and gives you disadvantage on stealth. Which is just straight up wrong. If you're trying to add more realistic armor to your game, padded armor should give buffs based on the level of padding. Maybe under 5 layers, it's like a plus 1, plus 2, up to 15, and plus 3 for anything more than that. But it does the opposite when you need to roll against fatigue, overheating, or swimming. If your game system has repair mechanics, make it break down easily and just take a lot of time to fix. Now let's talk about Linothorax. This is the name I'm using for a style of armor that is thick padded armor created from gluing layers of fabric together instead of sewing them, creating a rigid but still flexible carapace. Now, on the positive end, for its time in the Bronze Age, it was pretty damn effective. And interestingly enough, better against bludgeons than gambeson is. Which kind of makes sense, given that slings were popular in the Bronze Age, and you can outperform some rifles with a sling. Since it's glued and not sewn, the suit has more resistance when being struck, and can spread the force out. Now, it's also very comfortable and lightweight, because of the materials it's glued with. As you wear it, your body heat will cause the inside to soften a bit, letting it conform to your body, and because of its coverage area and construction, you carry most of the weight across your entire torso. This, combined with the fact that it was normally made of linen, makes it especially good in warm and hot climates. It's also very affordable and easy to access, since you can recycle old armor and clothing into your Linothorax, and flax, the plant you turn into linen, is easily cultivated in the places where Linothorax was used, and you didn't need highly advanced skills or tools to make a suit of armor. Which, hey, all sounds pretty good. But if you'll notice, there's quite a bit of specificity in the pros. Well, that's because there's some massive drawbacks. Firstly, you need to waterproof this shit, because the glue can be broken down and softened by high moisture, rain, sweat, and any other kind of liquid. And given that was used by the ancient Greeks, you can imagine other kinds of liquids that would get on your armor. Meaning the laminate glue will break down and make the armor easier to pierce. Now, Linothorax, also being very cheap and vulnerable to the elements, means it doesn't survive very well and is also associated with poverty. Which, in terms of raw protective power, does your social class matter? No. But a big part of battle is confidence. If you're going into battle and your confidence is shaken because you're armored up like a peasant without the courage to just go dick and balls out, you're more likely to lose the fight. But most importantly, Linothorax doesn't really protect you from hardened weapons. You know, like steel or iron. And any medium-weight range weapons or strong melee attacks will just melt through the armor, meaning it's essentially useless against anything that isn't blunt force. And this armor isn't really used very much in fiction, especially compared to gambeson. Because of it being largely regional, and even then not super effective or well documented, it's very rarely called out as being Linothorax or even armor when it does show up. And it can otherwise be rolled up into padded armor, just the low end. And funnily enough, this armor lines up better with D&D padded armor, since it wouldn't actually restrict your ability to get low and be stealthy. For your own system, probably don't include Linothorax unless you're going with an ancient Greek story. In that case, just make it shitty armor that falls apart easily. Your players should not be wearing it. Adventurers get to be cooler than this. And that's what we have for textile armors. So let's move on to leather. Beginning with rawhide. This armor is basically leather, but is made from hides that aren't tanned. Now, while it sounds like this wouldn't really provide much protection, it actually does. Compared to tanned leather, rawhide provides excellent protection against slashes and penetrating strikes, especially for its weight, meaning you can really pile it on for armor. It's also really cheap and viable to make with very low levels of technology and resources, since all you need are dried animal skins. It's also very easy to shape and layer, since you just need to shape it while it's wet, and then let it dry out, which lets you make complex custom fitted armor for cheap. It's also very good environmentally, because it's very, very durable, lasts for long periods of time, and is effective against things like fire, extreme temperatures, and wear and tear that happens from being outside. Meaning it is making it really good for being out in the wild, for sieges, and as coverings for more vulnerable pieces of equipment. Unfortunately, rawhide is vulnerable to water, because as it's exposed to water, it'll start to soften, causing it to stretch and rip, meaning it needs both an oil treatment and quickly dried if it ever gets wet. It's also pretty hard to maintain and repair, since it needs to be regularly cleaned, waterproofed, and reshaped because of contact with one of the warmest and moistest substances on Earth, the human body. And if you don't clean it, it'll rot off of you. And if it gets damaged too badly, it's not even worth it to repair or reshape. And in a straight-up fight, it's actually pretty awful. It's less flexible than leather, but more flexible than boiled leather or metal. But despite that flexibility, it's really weak in a prolonged fight, in the thick of close quarters melee where you can't really avoid getting hit, in water, or in bad weather. It's a lot better for skirmishing engagements. So then, how does it hold up in fiction? Surprisingly kind of accurate. Often called hide armor, it's often used by the same people in the same situations that it is in real life. Pre-industrial regions where skirmishes and brawls are more common than formation warfare. However, this probably isn't a conscious choice, as more because it fits the vibe. Although they do miss entirely it being used as a cheap leather armor in more industrially inclined or mass warfare-minded areas. Interestingly, too, hide armor becomes more powerful in fantasy, given the number of monsters and beasts with skins that make steel swords feel like they're made out of toothpicks. In your own game, this armor will need a lot of maintenance and upkeep or just be straight up destroyed, but doesn't take wear and tear damage very quickly. I mean, otherwise you can basically handle like some combination of Linothorax and Gambeson. But if you're looking for actual leather armor, then you should check out Cure Boli. This is leather that is boiled and molded into shape before being hardened with substances like wax, oil, or honey. This is boiled leather, by the way. Which is usually done in multiple layers and in conjunction with other armors. Now, on the good side, leather armor like this is very lightweight and can help keep you agile in a fight. And while it's more expensive than padded armor, it's still cheaper than metal, and it's very easy to mold, form, decorate, and carve. Which is great not only for fit, but for fashion. Which, hey, again, fashion is important. Especially when you want to demonstrate your faith in Jesus with a full-body carved mural of him teabagging Satan. But is it actually protective? Kinda? I mean, it's pretty good against bludgeons and can protect you from most handheld bludgeoning weapons, and is able to deflect some edged or piercing weapons. I mean, then you'll need that Jesus mural to protect you, which is actually where we get the cons. The biggest and most obvious is that leather armor is not particularly protective against a direct hit. Dedicated piercing and slashing attacks can pretty easily get through, even though slashing attacks are more likely to get mostly absorbed. Most range weapons, however, will absolutely eat this armor alive. But it's also not particularly durable, because leather, even treated leather, will lose its shape relatively quickly, is susceptible to heat and moisture, and is vulnerable to wear and tear. This is because leather has some of the same fragility and vulnerability to stress that clothing has, but is rigid like armor, meaning it's shifting around a lot less and having to just take the brunt of the stress damage over and over again. Funnily enough, most armor in fiction is handled like it's boiled leather. In a lot of fictional media, leather armor is exceptionally common, especially in fantasy movies because it's a lot cheaper for costuming departments, and is a lot easier to get a hold of compared to higher quality heavier and more difficult to work with and record metal armor. So I'm not judging the costuming departments, just judging the film industry for deciding this is how it should be. Anyways, leather armor would actually explain the reason why armor so rarely matters in fiction. All those cases of lightsabering make sense now. But if you're going to use boiled leather, then you should just have it be in line with gambeson, but with fewer layers for those defense bonuses. But, you know, keep the rest of what's in gambeson. And now, we move on to metal armor, with scale armor. This is a set of metal scales set into a leather or cloth backing in overlapping rows. Alternatively, this is called laminar armor, which is bands of metal on a leather or cloth backing instead. They're basically the same thing. Now, scale mail provides really good protection, especially compared to the armors we've already talked about and some of the ones we're going to, like sewn mail and lamellar. And because it's flexible and the scales can be sized to any dimensions, or dare I say, scale, it can also be put on basically any part of your body, and is really easy to wear and put on. It's also pretty cheap for its cost, and is a lot quicker and easier to build than similar or stronger armors like chainmail and plate armor. So it's viable to equip entire armies in. Which was actually done quite a bit. And for its weight class, it also gives pretty good mobility. And best of all, because it's a bunch of individual scales, you can pretty easily replace them, replace the strings and straps, and maintain it without much effort. Again, compared to other armors. So again, really good armor for an entire army. And since you should be used to it by now, what am I setting you up for? Right, exactly, for the crushing feeling of being told you're wrong. See, because scale armor is, sure, very strong and tough, it's only as tough as what it's mounted on. Because sure, a scale might survive, but if the backing rips, that scale is still off your body, where it's not being very helpful while you're getting gored with a pickaxe the long way around. Which is why scale armor is designed to be loose. Because if it were too tightly pressed against your skin and didn't have much room to deform, the whole thing would instead rip. And if something can pierce through or between the scales, then you're pretty much fucked. And getting between the scales isn't actually as rare as you'd think. Remember that when something gets hit really hard, it doesn't generally just sit in place. It tends to move. And if it doesn't, then the thing that's doing the hitting tends to. That's what we call a glance or a ricochet in the business of shooting people with an arrow. So a lucky arrow can get under a scale because it ricochets past one. Scale armor is also really bulky, usually shiny, and very loud, which means that for one, transporting it without wearing it becomes an issue of space. But also secondarily, it's not really versatile in the field of battle and can only really be used effectively in a straight-up melee, since it's clanking and clattering around. Also being kind of swishy and loose means it's not great for tight spaces or stealth. And the bulk means in rough terrain and skirmishes, it can also slow you down a lot. Speaking of which, scale armor is really vulnerable to the environment, because the same thing that makes gambeson great for all kinds of weather also makes scale mail awful, because it can retain air and moisture between the scales, which can get very uncomfortable and make it hard to warm up or cool down while wearing it. But it also means that if it gets wet, you need to make sure to get under all the scales to get the water out, or hang it in a way to let the moisture out. Scale mail is also pretty expensive for good quality parts, because without pre-modern methods of methodically measuring the exact carbon and iron content of every piece of steel manufactured, and manufacturing as more of a science than an art, each scale has slightly different strength. Which, sure, doesn't sound like a big deal, until you realize that you don't know which will bend or shatter on contact and which won't, and someone's swinging an axe into your chest. For all you know, you might have gotten some bad scales, which all of that in combination means while scale armor is very effective and great for battle, it wasn't the most popular, especially for outfitting an entire army. And before you say the Roman Legion, They only used laminar armor for a few hundred years of the few thousand years they existed. They mostly used chainmail. Now, surprisingly, when scalemail shows up, it actually isn't that poorly handled. I mean, besides your standard armor does nothing trope you see in a lot of fiction, it's surprisingly effective when it shows up, and it's one of the most realistic for people to take off for no goddamn reason. Even D&D has a pretty solid stat block for it. Heavy and protective, but definitely restrictive. For your own stuff, it should probably provide a pretty big buff, but restrict your athletics and acrobatics and ability to move through harsh terrain. Now we go to chainmail. This armor is a series of small metal links connecting together into a mesh armor, with a few ways to connect them. Like butted mail, where you take some rings that aren't fully closed, and like playing with action figures as a child, you make them kiss until the gaps line up and they get stuck together. Then the only part that you leave out is where you then throw them under your bed so your mom doesn't find out you're making them kiss. Unless I was the only one who did that, in which case, you're the weird one. Not me. But unlike the bond between two burly 80s G.I. Joes, butted mail is very weak compared to other chainmail and comes apart quite easily. But it's easy to make. Riveted mail is mail created by connecting the ends of the rings together with a rivet instead of just smooshing them together. And if I had to make a full hauberk of that, I think I'd walk into a bonfire. But then there's wedge riveting, the strongest by far, and is the same as riveted, but uses a wedge-shaped rivet, so it's harder for the rivet to loosen and reinforces the bond across the entire ring. Now, the benefit of to chainmail is how massively protective it is, especially against cutting attacks, and while vulnerable to narrow weapons that can slip through the rings, broader tips can't get through. Which if you've seen videos of people putting chainmail on a log and chopping through it, that's entirely unrealistic. Chainmail is way stronger than that. That's probably butted mail, for starters, on a solid surface with no give. When you're actually wearing chainmail, it operates a lot better than that. But anyways, it's also extremely flexible armor and has great ventilation and weight for its armor class. It's also cheaper and easier to repair than armors of similar protectiveness like plate armor, which has made it a favorite for militaries for millennia. However, on the bad side, if you have no backing underneath the armor, chainmail can't really distribute the blunt force of an attack very well, meaning any hit with enough oomph can still hurt, break bones, or even kill you. Added on to that, even if the weapon has a broad tip, some amount will still slip past the chains, meaning if you're not wearing a backing, someone stabbing you with a broadsword is still going to hurt and might get infected or clip something important. Speaking of which, if you decide to wear it without backing, you won't make it to the battle, because that son of a bitch will pinch, chafe, pull, and cut basically every inch of exposed skin it touches. Chainmail isn't free from gaps, and part of the strength is that the chains can slide together. But it also means if you have hair or skin in between those rings, it'll hurt real bad. So backing is required. Chainmail is still also incredibly heavy and requires a diligent and regular maintenance to not rust and to check for damage links to be replaced, since if one of the links start to give, it increases the odds that the next ones break. And while still cheaper than other armors of its class, it's still not cheap and not exceptionally viable to mass produce, since it's so work materials intensive. While it won't take years to manufacture, it still takes skilled laborers hundreds or sometimes thousands of hours to make. And in fiction, chainmail is treated extremely poorly. Because for some fucking reason, about half the time you see fictional characters wearing it without backing. Sir, are you fucking stupid? Sometimes they'll even try and they'll be wearing an obvious t-shirt, and I'm almost more insulted by that. How dare you be lazy and then try to trick me into buying your bullshit? Only I'm allowed to do that. And this said, insult to injury, chainmail is usually portrayed as just crumpling under a thrusting attack or bludgeons, but just being entirely immune to slashes. But as I've said, that's not true. Thrusting weapons can still be stopped if the blade isn't very narrow, but you need to wear backing to protect you from all attacks because tiny metal rings aren't thick enough to absorb that impact. Which again, makes it fucking stupid that people are just shown wearing chainmail hoods on bare-ass heads. Like, if you like your hair pulled, I get it, but holy shit, the battle place is not a place for your kink. When in a role-playing game, I mean, honestly, chainmail should just be like middle-of-the-road metal armor, being very protective, but needing support. But if it breaks, it'll be a pain in the fucking ass, and give you pain damage if it's worn with that backing. Which leads us to plate mail. I mean, as far as stuff that's left to cover on the list. Not in terms of kink. Okay. So, plate armor is a form of armor made from interlocking plates and sections of metal. Plate mail can often be mixed and matched, but we're going to be talking about full plate, which is full coverage metal plates across your whole body. Now, obviously, this is the best full body protection you can possibly ask for. It's essentially immune to most attacks, even some later forms being able to absorb bullets. And that being used as a representation of the armor's quality. Now, in addition to being incredibly protective on the battlefield, plate mail is also really durable and survivable. With regular good maintenance, even last generations without much need for repair, and most wear and tear having little to no noticeable effect on its protectiveness. And it's also surprisingly mobile, flexible, and comfortable, especially when well made. Sure, it's heavy, but good plate mail is barely noticeable when you're actually fighting, and is generally pretty comfortable to wear. And of course, is the morale boost of being depicted as the Chad in the metal armor. You can feel the protection radiating off of it, and the cost makes you feel like you're piloting a luxury piece of equipment. It's a similar morale boost to showing up to a street race in an Aston Martin. Necessary or optimal? Nah, probably not. Intimidating, expensive, and comfortable? Yes. But for the bad sides of plate armor, is firstly, it's heavy. Generally in the range of 35 to 60 pounds of armor, depending on the grade of steel and the exact thickness and coverage, but that's what to expect. And while it's distributed across your body, that's still up to extra 60 pounds of weight that your body doesn't normally have, which will slow you down. And even when well designed, plate armor will still limit some of your mobility and ability to flex and bend. And if you end up on your back, forget it, you're not getting up before some filthy peasant is grappling you trying to give you a dental exam with a knife. Now, plate also exhausts you quickly and gets very hot and stuffy. And if you're in a fight for long enough or wearing it too much, it'll start to chafe you too. Which, in combination, means it sucks for long fights, high humidity, and high temperatures. While it'll usually protect you, plate armor does deaden your senses. I mean, think. Your sense of touch is really hampered because you're in the punishment tube for naughty wieners. Your sense of hearing is muffled because all the noise from the outside has to go through your visor and breathing grill, or reverberate through the outside of your helmet to hear it. Your sense of smell is filled with your own BO, and your peripheral vision is almost completely covered because you don't want those visor slots to be too big. But suddenly, someone smacks you on the side of the head with a metal fist. Well, sure, you might not be too badly hurt, but you're disoriented visually, your head hurts, and now you know what the beans inside of a can hears when it's dropped on the floor of your local Walmart. And while plate mail is really effective against all attacks, it can't really protect you fully from the force of an attack. Meaning a bludgeoning weapon or strong enough hit from other weapons will still hurt like a son of a bitch, and if it's in a place that's usually vulnerable for beatings, like the back of your knee, your skull, or your taint, dick, and balls and asshole, then at the very least your day is ruined. Assuming you survive. But out of battle, it can be a pain in the ass too. Because it takes a long time to take off or put on and usually requires help. And buying it is expensive as shit and requires a lot of engineering to make it comfortable, protective, and flexible for your body and who you are. And if it's poorly made, then it'll be uncomfortable, inflexible, and or easy to crack. It also requires constant maintenance to prevent rust and damage building up over time, and any major repairs that are needed require a specialist artisan to fix, meaning you probably can't do it yourself. Now, in fiction, people like to pretend that plate armor is extremely restrictive and makes you slow and lumbering, that you can't do anything acrobatic or even mount a horse by yourself, which is untrue. Its effectiveness is also treated in one of two ways. Either an aluminum can that can barely withstand a good punch, or a virtual tank, being able to absorb cannonballs and lets you wade in mobs of peasants unscathed. Neither is true. You can still get hurt and killed, as actually common for people to kill knights in full plate by getting a few buddies, tackling them to the ground, and shoving a dagger in between plates in important areas until the knight stops moving. Also, there's this common misconception that bludgeoning weapons can beat plate armor by bending the plates to restrict mobility and causing them to lock in place. But look, if the attack is strong enough to bend the plates around, then it'll probably just break the bone beneath and might just straight up kill you. So, in your own systems, this should have the highest possible buffs and cost, but also be a son of a bitch in the comfort department. But okay, we've gotten through all these single material armors, meaning we're moving on to mixed materials, which combine some of the benefits of the other armors together, beginning with zone plate or chain. This is meant to combine the benefits of gambeson and chainmail or plate armor into a single piece of armor by sewing the metal layer into the middle of the gambeson. And this gives us some pretty good benefits. You gain the durability of chainmail or plate armor while keeping them protected from rust and wear and tear. On top of that, if you're wearing the sewn chain version, if the chain breaks, they don't fall off, meaning they're still protecting you, and they're a lot harder to break. It's also more comfortable, easier to decorate and wear artistically, and can also be concealed more easily, which is more useful than it sounds. However, while it does cover a lot of the bad parts and improve both armors, there are some new disadvantages. The metal rubbing up against the cloth is going to wear it through a lot faster, and it becomes harder to do proper maintenance on the metal parts of the armor, and water is now a serious issue beyond comfort because you have to dry all the way through before the metal starts to rust, especially if it's sweat. And also doubles up the overheating of both armors and adds the weight of them together, which is more inefficient and inconvenient than equally protective armors. Although if you only armor specific parts, they massively reduce the weight. And, this one's pretty heavily overused in fiction. Look, it existed in real life, but much like you probably should realize from hearing it, a lot of people back in the day realized how much of a pain in the ass it is to clean and maintain compared to just wearing chainmail. Of course, it did see a good amount of use, but it wasn't like how we see in fiction as a bulletproof vest. Is more used for armor that less requires stealth and has more style in protecting the chainmail. Related to this armor in a way is brigandine, which is a specific thing, but for the purposes of this episode, is any kind of vest, jacket, or armor segment where the metal plates are riveted to leather or cloth, or both. And in the late Middle Ages, this was a very popular type of armor, which we'll see why. Firstly, it's exceptionally protective. The gambeson, or boiled leather, protect you from smashing and slashing, while the plates protect you from pole arms and stabbings. At the same time, it's exceptionally mobile, since the plates move with you and give you the ability to bend and move fairly easily, even when it's made cheaply. It's also very easy to repair, and it's a lot cheaper than plate armor. And it's easier to put on and take off by yourself and can be repaired on your own, with damaged plates able to be removed, and you can rivet plates that are loose or misaligned. It's like at-home dental work, but with less blood and screaming and ER visits. Never trying that again. Brigandine is also very versatile, much like a unicorn, allowing you to attach more armor pieces, layer it together, or even construct brigandine from other pieces of armor, meaning, again, much like a unicorn, it can connect and be connected to various flaps and flanges, can serve as the backbone of a thruple, and is usually made from something slash someone else. Of course, neither can repair your marriage. On the bad side, much like your magical bisexual to fulfill all your swinger fantasies, Brigandine is very vulnerable to thrusting. While the plates can have overlaps, and can also absorb piercing blows, especially if the plates are close together and securely placed, but piercing blows, as you would know if you ever did stabbings, tend to ricochet and glance off of hard surfaces, meaning a strong thrust can slip through the plates more than other armors good against thrusting. Even though it's good armor, it's also quite a bit less protective and has less coverage than other armors popular at the height of its usage. So while cheap, it's cheap for a reason. However, it's also heavy, being about 20 pounds centered on your chest. Which, while it doesn't sound like it would be a lot, keep in mind that a breastplate for infantry of the same size is about 8 pounds. So it's very noticeable. It's also, clearly, not exceptionally breathable. Metal and leather aren't really known for being breathable. And finally, there's an association between Brigandine and the lower classes, which, while again, I think it's dumb to think that your socioeconomic class matters in a fight, it can have pretty bad effects on your morale and willingness to fight. So in fiction, Brigandine is really shit on, because it's rarely acknowledged, and when it is, it's misidentified. Man, the bisexual allegory is starting to be a little bit too accurate. But is usually called splint or studded leather armor, both of which really undermine Brigandine. Because studded leather wasn't even really a real thing, but things similar to Brigandine have been used for millennia and it's incredibly effective. Almost to an untouchable level when compared to riveting leather together. But when splint armor, it's often called bulky, heavy, hard to move in, or even shoddy. Which is everything good Brigandine isn't. You're not going to say any flexibility or acrobatic records wearing it, but hey, on the battlefield, you're still going to be pretty flexible. When you're adding this into your own game, it's actually pretty middle of the road for protectiveness, and have a very minor debuff for the weight and lack of breathability. And assumedly, it would take more damage from wear and tear. And our final armor for the day, Lamellar. This armor is made from small plates organized into rows, oftentimes worn over padded armor, but it doesn't require it to work. And this armor can be made of just about any material, from metal to leather to bone to wood. Also rolled into this would be the samurai armor, which is kind of a mix between Lamellar and plate armor. Anyways, this armor offers really great protection, especially against piercing and slashing attacks, and due to the armor being tightly packed plates with heavy overlap, each piece supports the other, meaning that even weaker materials can withstand pretty heavy blows. The armor is also very modular, with each piece and scale able to be replaced as needed or as you can afford it for pretty cheap, meaning your armor can continually improve over time, even if you initially use the leather and wood. You can also repair it super easily, just remove the scale in question, push the rest down the line, and add a new scale. Also, given its weight and protectiveness, Lamellar is relatively flexible. However, on the downside, basically no matter what you make it out of, it's going to be incredibly heavy as a full suit. It doesn't really give you much protection from bludgeons, especially because if the plates aren't made of metal, they're small enough to be cracked, smashed, or vaporized. And the metal plates can either reverberate the force through or bend. And also the lacing of the armor, if it's not particularly strong, can snap. And even if it is strong, it's pretty vulnerable to wear and tear and can be cut or torn in a fight, causing the armor to become compromised. You'd also have very limited range of motion given the class of the armor, meaning it's not very helpful in a fight once the formation starts to collapse. It also takes a lot of time to make. Mine, not as much as plate armor, for what you're getting, it's very time-consuming and is hard work. In fiction, Lamellar appears a lot, but in the same way that British accents do. Are they necessary for this character in medieval France? No, but it sounds cool. in much the same way, when it's used in fiction, most writers use it without really understanding why it was used in the first place. Usually, since lame lore was more popular in Eastern Europe and Asia, it's just assigned to vaguely Eastern groups. But this fails to take into account why Lamellar is picked over something like plate armor. And it really comes down to engineering time, comfort, and a smaller focus on shock cavalry. Which means that, really, it's a good option where you need a lot of infantry armor and don't have the time to invest in plate armor that's more comfortable than it. So for your game, make it similar to plate, just slightly more vulnerable to harm and more comfortable. And with that, we finished our list of armors. Now, hopefully I managed to teach you a little bit about armor types for fantasy stories and role-playing needs. But if not, I hope that at the very least, getting a broad overview is entertaining. And either way, it was worthwhile to me to get everything all in one place, and I hope it was for you too. And if anything I said was wrong or something you want to discuss and explore further, good. I'm glad to keep talking about things and be corrected. If you have your own thoughts, as always, make sure to tell me about them. I love things like this and would love to keep talking about it. But anyways, thank you for listening. If you have opinions, improvements, corrections, or anything else you want to talk about, comment below or email me at waytatpods@gmail.com. That is waytatpods@gmail.com. And remember to like, share, and subscribe for more. And follow my podcast feed for audio versions, and come back next time while I do some world building live. Not really live. Have a good night, don't murder, have fun, and remember, all armors, like the gaze, are vulnerable to a thick, hard thrust. This is my Why Are You Talking About This? I've been your host, William. Good night.